the hate we're breeding. Look at the fear we're feeding. Look at the lives we're leading, the way we've always done before. Podcast faithful, welcome back to another Monday night episode of Source Material. So unless you were living under the proverbial rock this weekend, you may have heard of a little movie that released called Captain America Civil War. Well, tonight we are going to discuss this seven-part 2006-2007 Marvel event. This episode, I welcome back the ever-vigilant Ronnie Adams of the Screaming Boy Productions podcast, and joining us is none other than the patriarch of the Radulich and Broadcasting Network, the mandated reporter, Mark Radulich. Spoiler warning, we will be spoiling these books. If you'd like to go out and read them, feel free to do so and come back to us when you are comfortable to listen to our coverage. Just a heads up, the themes and language used in this episode may tend to fall in the more mature side of things, so be prepared and have your earbuds in or radio turned down if you are in an environment that may be sensitive to that sort of thing. Remember, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Just search Radulich and subscribe to hear all of our great podcast content. Also, if you are on Facebook, stop by the Radulich and Broadcasting Facebook page, give that thing a like to be notified on all the upcoming content our network has to offer. So the question remains, when hero faces hero, whose side are you on? Let's find out. Don't do it. All right. Well, so you're ready to rock and roll, Ronnie?
Yeah.
All right. I've got a recorder on my end. We got backups. We do backups here because that's how professional we are. It might take us a half hour to get doing something like that, but
see, this is the first backup we've ever done.
Damn it, we do it. We're still doing it.
Doing it well.
All right, now me and Mark, I recorded a little bit about what you was talking there. Hopefully that I got a little bit. But I know you said that you yourself just had the opportunity to reread Civil War in the past couple weeks. Now, had you read it shortly after it came out back in 2006?
No.
Okay.
I've only read it since I've been in this house married to my current wife, which was after 2008. So somewhere between 2008 and 2000, so somewhere in the last 8 years, I was starting to slowly get back into reading comic books, a story here, a story there. I went into the comic book store and I picked the Civil War graphic novel, just the actual Civil War, not the tie-ins. I also picked up the Thor where he brings Asgard back and puts it in Oklahoma for some odd reason. And I had heard about Civil War. I'd heard it was a good story. It was something I was definitely interested in. And it still today remains one of my, let's say, top 10 favorite Marvel stories of all time, as far as the big events go. So I was glad to have read it and rereading it again in preparation for not only this podcast, but the cinematic Civil War made me remember why I liked it so much. I think it still stands up. Still relevant.
Mm-hmm. Mark Millar, I think, or how do you pronounce that, Ronnie? Miller or Millar, or how would you pronounce that?
Yep.
All right. Sounds good. No,
I think it's Millar.
All right.
I think it's Malarkey.
he's the writer of this. He's the one that brings it all together. And then we got, what's his last name? McNiven. Steve McNiven on pencils. Now, of course, we're only covering the main Civil War title, 1-7. Now, Ronnie, I'm asking you the same question. Civil War, were you reading it when it was coming out?
Or yes.
Did you pick it? You was. Okay.
Yeah. It was the same as Mark. I read it when it was coming out, but it was one of those things that I was really interested to see where they were going to go and how crazy it was going to be. And to me, it's one of the better Marvel storylines to date, especially the bigger storylines. I think it stands up to the test of time, and it's a fantastic read because it really puts into perspective of the different personalities that come along with these characters.
One of the things that we're always used to seeing is, you know, hero versus hero. There's always some kind of a misunderstanding, and then the guys join together and fight a bad guy. That's mm-hmm. that's kind of the
classic formula. Team up.
There you go. Your classic team up formula where somebody's upset about this and they run into each other, and then they kind of don't understand as to what the other one's doing there. They get into a fight and then they decide, oh, okay, let's get the bad guy. In this particular case, in this story, there is a divide, a clear divide amongst our heroes. You know, our two main characters, Iron Man and Captain America, are at odds because of a piece of legislation that has got introduced. Now, we're going to get into this here in a few minutes, but the point being, these are our heroes versus heroes. There are not, I guess just to say, there's not really much of an evil influence that is clear to the reader. So let's talk a little bit here about, I mean, the story, what happens. You know, like I said, it's going to be 7 issues. Issue 1 shows us where we open up amongst or watching a reality show unfold. The New Warriors, right, Ronnie? Is that who these guys were? The New Warriors, comprised of, I could tell you I recognize Speedball. I want to say that's Night Thrasher, but I could be way off.
I can't remember
who this dude is. This group of superheroes, they're like the B-list guys. And they're together and they're filming this reality show. And the purpose of the show is they're going to take down bad guys, film it, and make money by airing it as a television show. So they get the drop on these villains. Specifically, one of those villains is a guy by the name of Nitro, who has this incredible explosive power. He can pretty much explode what's around him. He's okay, but everything around him obviously is destroyed. They get the drop on these guys. There's a battle that ensues. They're filming it. I don't know if it's Speedball or somebody gets Nitro cornered. And this is all happening in a residential area, not too far from an elementary school, actually. And this battle is going on. No regard for what exactly is going on around them. And Nitro gets cornered. His immediate reaction is to explode.
Yeah.
He explodes.
The only heavy hitter you got on the team is Namorita, but you got Speedball, Night Thrasher, Namorita, and I can't remember the big dude's name offhand, but his power is like corrosion.
Okay.
Bacterial. Yeah. Sorry. It's bacteria, which is disgusting.
That sounds, very scary.
Yeah. But,
sounds like me when I was sick.
Namorita is the one that pushes, Nitro into a bus.
Mm-hmm.
And he just blows everything to crap.
Yeah. He just obliterates everything around him and causes this tragedy that kills not only innocent bystanders, but we're talking children. Initially, I think the numbers are like 600 to 800 people. It ends up being over like 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And it catches the public eye. This is clearly a way for the audience to kind of get an idea of what it would be like to live in a world like that. What would be the human reaction? Now, that's been explored a lot in most Marvel comics. That element's come up. But here, this is the launching point for our federal government to get involved and say, okay, this cannot happen anymore. We have these kids running off who have these powers. They're unchecked. They just go off, do whatever they want. We need to institute a law that says you have to register yourself with the federal government as a superhero. You can't just be under a mask, secret identity. If that is the case, you're considered an outlaw, and you will be arrested and put in prison.
Jesse, can we go back a second to something you just said? You know, because the thing with the Marvel Universe, especially, the big attraction for it was the cost of being a superhero was always a little bit more personal, a little bit more intimate. Spider-Man, and that's the reason why the Spider-Man reveal is so important in this story, is he was the classic example of, well, what if the bad guys found out who I was? yes, I have all of these great powers, but my loved ones would be affected. You know, when the Vulture, I think, figures out Spider-Man is Peter Parker, he goes after Aunt May. Mm-hmm. You have the Green Goblin, one version of the Green Goblin, throwing a stone out a window. Gwen Stacy. So it's always been a very personal thing. This is the first time they made the consequences of being a superhero a macro issue. So it's always been a micro issue, a personal issue. This is the first time it's a macro issue where they're saying, well, how does it affect the rest of the world? If I decide I'm going to put on tights and scare the shit out of my neighbors and go fight crime, okay, so there's a personal cost, but how does that affect my neighbors? How does that affect the world around me that I've decided to go and do this? And it's an interesting thing because when, you know, we're talking about books written for children, books written for teenagers, for adults originally, but ultimately what became books written for kids that, you know, that brought you into a fantasy world. So who the fuck thinks about that? You know, this is supposed to be for escapism. But if comics have evolved, and I think Roddy can probably speak to this better than I can, there's been a desire to sort of bring them into the real world. It's less escapism and more, well, how do these things relate in a way that makes sense to people living in the real world?
Right.
And that, I think, is the ultimate theme behind Civil War, is an attempt by Marvel to say, this is how it all relates to real life.
I agree wholeheartedly because it was a long time before you saw comic books really dive into real world issues. Like, I think one of the things that I remember as a growing up and reading was an issue the Hulk dealt with a friend of his having AIDS. And I didn't think of that when I was reading these comic books. I'm like, no, I mean, that's not what I want to read. I just want to see Hulk smash.
Right.
Of course, he was Smart Hulk then. But it's more interesting now that I'm adult to watch this stuff. I mean, to read this stuff. And because as you get older, you start asking these questions. Well, you know, if I was to go out and put on a utility belt and try to save the world, how would it affect my family, my friends, my job, my, you know, all this other stuff? You know, what I've got responsibilities. I've got all this stuff going on. And how does that affect me and how does that affect others?
The first season of Daredevil on Netflix actually dealt with that extreme.
Yeah.
The second season got a little whiny, Mr. Funky. But,
yeah.
But you can hear all about that podcast in the archives, so I won't get into detail now. But I thought the first season dealt with that extremely well of, you know, people are not just going to all of a sudden think it's a wonderful thing that you run out there and beat up guys in the street and take the law into your own hands. Most people are going to react with abject horror.
Yeah, people are going, and it's going to tick people off because it has, I mean, it affects everybody around them. Because if our real world bad guys are, you know, drug dealers, mob bosses, terrorists, things like that, if you go after one guy, you know, his flunkies, his friends, his, you know, they're going to come after you in any way possible. Not only does that affect you, but it affects the people around you, the people you're trying to help, and all this other, you know, just like in Daredevil. I mean, he hit hard, and he got hit hard back.
I don't want to get too far off a tangent, but I want to say it was either Boardwalk Empire or something else that I saw recently where they were talking about what it means to be a mob, what it means to be a gangster. And it might have been Boardwalk Empire. And I think one of the characters even says, it's like, you have to be willing to put the fear of God into everybody. You have to be a terrible human being. Because, you know, if somebody fucks you, you have to be willing to kill their entire family and do so without the least bit of regret or anything else. And you have to be able to make those decisions at any given time. You can't just be, you know, you can't decide you're going to be a gangster and then not play by those rules. The whole thing about being a mob boss is to be willing to go as far, to go further than anybody else to make people fear you, because without that fear, you have no control. Now you're a superhero. Now you think you're a superhero. You know, go try being a superhero with the Mexican cartel. You know, you can't protect everybody all of the time. And so getting trying to bring this all the way around back to Civil War, if you're going to go out there and be a hero, you have to think about how that's going to affect your loved ones, you know, your wife, your parents, your husband, whatever.
At the end of these first two issues, there's a clear division between those that want to stay, you know, masked and have their identity secret and stay, I wouldn't say in the shadows, but be able to fight crime without having to deal with all the side stuff that kind of goes with trying to maintain a family life, and all, you know, somebody coming after your family or somebody destroying the building that you're working in. Well, okay, so there's a clear division. We've got the people that want to go underground. Well, now they have to go underground because the Registration Act is about to be signed into law. And we have those that side with the government, namely Iron Man, who takes the helm at trying to get these superheroes registered and, you know, with the federal government backing them so they wouldn't be fugitives. One of the people that he recruits and one of the main parts of this story is Spider-Man. He recruits Spider-Man and he talks Spider-Man and actually demasking. I'll try unmasking. demasking does not, that sounds like something somebody do to a Lucha Libre wrestler. But he unmasks himself in front of everybody. Cameras, right there at a news conference, takes his mask off. Now, we talked a little bit about the importance of it. I mean, just imagine J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah.
If you didn't bring it up, I was going to.
The guy had to have been livid.
He just faints.
I mean, this is a big thing. That is a big deal. There have been plenty of times in the past in Marvel Comics where Spider-Man had his identity. You know, there were plots where somebody knew who Spider-Man was. J. Jonah Jameson at one point, and I picked this up off of a review or something I saw. I did not know this, but J. Jonah Jameson at one point actually had it figured out that Peter Parker was Spider-Man, and then Peter Parker convinced him that it was like a big Photoshop deal. This was clearly before Photoshop was done, but they were altered photographs. So J. Jonah Jameson had some kind of an inkling at one point, but then, you know, that was all washed away. Now, this is a big deal. Spider-Man has come to the forefront, and he said, look, this is who I am. I am siding with Iron Man, and I am registering myself. So there's our first two issues. And I didn't even talk about what really drove Captain America to the side of the underground was the fact that S.H.I.E.L.D. almost turned on him. I would actually say that they kind of did. I think they jumped to a little bit of a conclusion. Would you agree, Ronnie?
Can we talk about that for a second?
Absolutely.
It's one of the things I don't like about the story. It's one of the few quibbles that I have, is that if that were a film, it was very unearned. It comes out of fucking nowhere unless Maria Hill is a complete psychopath. Because he's just like, oh, you know, I'm not really happy. He literally expresses an opinion.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not Wazooie about this whole idea. And Maria Hill's just like, get him. Like, wait a minute now. Like, he hadn't done anything. At that point, Captain America hadn't done anything other than express an opinion that he didn't think this was a good idea. He hadn't turned on S.H.I.E.L.D. He hadn't done anything. They all of a sudden, you know, I was just thinking of the Winter Soldier, where at the very least, he had the meeting with what's-his-face first. And then, you know, when he wouldn't tell him where Sam Jackson was or whatever else, then they tried to jump him in the elevator. This, it was like, you know, like, I don't like this law. Oh, yeah? Well, you need to die. bit of a jump there, folks.
A little bit of a quick turn. Well, the only bit of defense that I can give Maria Hill is the fact that she knows that if Captain America is not on board, she has to have the responsibility to take him down. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you right now, if I thought at any moment that Captain America there's a possibility that he's going to be my enemy, I'm going to take him down as quickly and without.
It still wasn't earned at that point.
I agree. I mean, I agree. But I think that's the only thing I could say is that, okay, she had to jump to a conclusion, although she just seemed like she was being.
I think there's room in this world to be not for something, but not actively against it either. That's why I'm insisting on this wasn't earned yet. He hadn't yet said, I'm not going to comply. He just said, this is a bad law. If every time you turned around and said, I don't like something, either, you know, you someone responded and you got like put in jail or whatever, what kind of country would this be? So, I mean, somebody hearing this might go, like, that's taking this a little too far. But that's what it was really like. It was, he hadn't yet said, I'm not going to comply with this. I'm not going to register. He didn't have time to think about it. He's just like, I don't think this is a great idea. And they were already on top of him.
Yeah. I think there's a bit of a pissing contest between him and Maria Hill, to be honest, because he sits there and he looks at everybody that's got his guns drawn, their guns drawn on him, and he's like, put your weapons down. Now, she is, I think, a new director of S.H.I.E.L.D. at this point in time.
Yeah.
She ain't taking no shit. I mean, she's like, no, you guys belay that order. As a matter of fact, don't pay attention to him because he's now a fugitive. Of course, then we have the breakdown where, you know, everybody decides to start firing tranquilizers at him, and Captain America has to get away by jumping out of a window and landing on an aircraft and having them land the jet in a park somewhere. But I think that Marvel was trying to, as much as they, I think they wanted everybody to be kind of split as to which side they wanted to pick. This one really painted the registration side in a negative light.
I get it, sort of. Captain America being who he is, you want to... This dude is charismatic. This guy's a natural-born leader. He is everything that every man has ever wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
And he... Everybody... I mean, he leads people. He's even led, you know, talked villains into following him. Different things like that. If you're going to have this charismatic leader that's just absolutely opposes the very core, everything about this law that you're going to pass, you're going to want him out of the way any way possible. Now, not defending this, it is out of nowhere. It did kind of happen abruptly. But you got to think about who he is, what he represents. I mean, the man's name is Captain America, for God's sake. So it's...
But that almost says that they think that they know they're doing wrong. They know they're about to do a terrible thing, and they're anticipating him sticking up for the righteous and the good, so they have to take him down immediately. But that's not the case. The case, this particular instance, is they think they're doing the... What makes Civil War a compelling story is that on both sides, they are swearing on a stack of Bibles they are doing the right thing.
Yeah. Right. Well, they believe that what they're doing is right, and so does Captain America. And they know if they don't do something about it soon and take extreme measures are going to be taken anyway, because you've got people that are protect their identity with their lives. You know, this is the people around them that they love and everything. You know, they don't want everybody to know who they are. So they're going to do anything they can to protect who they are, to protect their identity, to protect their values and everything else. And with this guy leading them, they have to take extreme measures to keep their ideas and what they know is right happening.
I think they knew at the outset
this was going to be a war.
He was the guy that if they could take him, if he ain't on our side, he needs to be out of the way.
Right.
Because if he is the figurehead, which is, I think, stated later here in this, I think it's stated later here in the series, but if he's the figurehead of the resistance, we're in trouble.
Exactly. I mean, they're going to be in some deep crap.
Yeah.
Because no matter what, they've got a guy that
he represents. People
would follow him into, they would walk barefoot into hell for him.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, no matter who's right, no matter who's wrong, no matter what's going on, they're probably going to lose. Mm-hmm. Because he could talk, everything that every analogy I have is going to insult someone, so I can't say it. Or talk an Eskimo into, buying ice. But you can't say Eskimo anymore. But
you could talk a transgender going into the right bathroom.
Oh, dear God. Why would you? No.
Transgender people can go in any bathroom they want. If you're not interested in what people are doing, you're the problem.
Ah, oh, damn it.
we'll take a
on his collar. Who's getting hot here?
We'll take a note out of Tommy Boy. He could talk a woman in white gloves into buying ketchup popsicles.
There we go.
And you have to take extreme measures. You have to do what you need to do to make sure that what you think and know in your core is right. You got to make that happen. Taking extreme measures and seeing Captain America taken down makes sense to me. That's just me.
Seemed awful.
If I'm writing this, I have him on board initially, and then somebody else won't give up the mask and is killed.
Okay.
Or even better, even stronger, somebody is forced to give up the mask against their will, and the next thing they know, their family is taken out.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have blood on their hands. And that's when I can see Captain America sort of turning and saying, this is why I didn't want to support this. This is exactly what I was afraid of. And then have him hit Maria Hill in the head with the shield.
Whose side are you on, Ronnie Adams? We know it's going to be Captain America, whoever follows him, versus Iron Man and the registration, whoever's registering. Whose side are you rooting for here? Which side would you be on if you were in this universe?
That's a tough one, but I would have to go with Captain America. It's not as tough as I'm saying, because you've got guys that that risk their lives every day, and they don't have to. One bad apple spoils the bunch. You got a bunch of idiot kids who want their 15 minutes of fame, and they ruin everything for everybody. You know, saying that that these kids are representative of everybody and how they feel and how they're going to work. Is not fair to the guys who actually caused any trouble. Yeah. Captain. Well, everybody knows who Captain America is at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, you know, they know Steve Rogers or whatever, which says something else about his character. Even though everybody knows who he is, he's willing to fight this law that has nothing to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't affect him in the least. It just affects the people that he cares about and the people that are doing what they need to do or what they feel they need to do.
Well, all right, just to make this interesting, I'll take Iron Man's side. And I'll argue it this way. There's a reason why we have laws. There's a reason why we're a nation of laws, because we do not want chaos. You might have the best intentions, but the road to hell is paved with the best intentions. Let's go back to my earlier example of you deciding that you're going to take on the mob, the thing that drove, you know, Batman into the streets. The unintended consequences of what you do is you get other people killed. In real life, you know, the Mexican cartel hurts a lot of innocent people. The Russian mob hurts a lot of innocent people. The Yakuza hurt a lot of innocent people. And when they see someone, you know, nutcase running around in the street, yeah, maybe you take out, you know, are you going to be a killer? Are you a punisher? Or, you know, are you going to be someone who doesn't kill? Either way, there's going to be more of them than there are of you. And there are going to be more targets out there than you can protect. And there's a reason why we don't allow people to do this. There's a reason why superheroes are the thing of fiction, not just because being bitten by a radioactive spider doesn't give you spider powers, and half of these powers are physically impossible, just on a physics perspective.
Says you.
I've read The Physics of Superheroes, sir.
Ooh, that's a good book. I made it through like 3 chapters.
57 of them.
But no, I mean, look, this stuff is high fantasy and it's great. It doesn't work in real life. And I think that is what made in the forthcoming movie and in the comic book series, the registration side compelling, is that this isn't coming from a place of evil. It's coming from a place of stark reality. Mm-hmm. In a fictional universe where people are like MODOK are running around, you know, fine, I can live like, you know,
giant head.
You know, we live with these things because there are, I'm going to counter argue myself here. There are bigger than life, crazy things. You know, there's Thanos attacking. There's the Annihilus wave. There's Galactus. There's, you know, all kinds of crazy things that the cops just can't handle. Get it? So you need them, but you probably don't need them running amok. Or you have the most extreme case, which would be Superman. You know, when Superman decides he no longer wants to play by man's rules, mm-hmm. he makes up his own and becomes a tyrant. So, I'm all for putting boundaries on superheroes. Go Iron Man.
Go Iron Man. Accountability. I think that is the main idea behind the Registration Act, at least in my opinion. You've got heroes or villains that are out there operating, and let's say somebody gets killed in some kind of a crazy mishap between a battle between a hero and a villain. someone should be held accountable. The villains normally are, obviously, but if this was something that could have been easily avoided, that the superhero could have done, I can understand the government's want or feel the necessity to try and put or have at least a name as to who in the world this is.
Just a little, I mean, I don't mean to interrupt, but
you go right ahead.
I mean, I have the unpopular view of if you outlaw guns, only outlaws will have guns. I know that's, you know, a lot of people be like, but, you know, so is, I guess that's where my view comes from as well is, if you register these guys, that doesn't mean the other guys are going to be registered. People like this with powers are still going to be running amok and they're still going to be doing what they need to do. You just now have a police force that has a set of rules that they have to follow. Otherwise they're going to get put in jail. Mm-hmm. A lot of people can argue with me. Well, the police do what they want anyway. Shut up. That's not what we're talking about. And if you all had that same view, then I apologize for telling you to shut up. But like I said, it's not a popular view, but that's just my view of you know, the world today and the society saying that if somebody has the power and if somebody has the wherewithal to stop this stuff, then by God, let them. You know what I mean? I feel perfectly safe with some people carrying a weapon. We'll just say it like that because in reality, these people are weapons. They are their version of somebody, you know, carrying a weapon around. They are a weapon. They're just walking around. Mm-hmm. I feel okay with that if they've gone, you know, if they are who they are, but say they are, because no matter what, these people are going to be carrying anyway. And if their intention is to do harm, it doesn't matter what the government says. They're going to do harm anyway.
Issue 3. The side of the registration springs the trap on Captain America and those that are underground. They it's just such a dirty tactic too. They make this, I think there's like a chemical plant that's on fire, and they put out this bunch of false stuff that there's a bunch of people trapped, and these guys, Captain America, Daredevil, Hercules, Luke Cage, spring into action. Lo and behold, Iron Man and a lot of the registration faithful, including Reed Richards, The Thing, She-Hulk, Ms. Marvel, are there waiting for them. At first, Iron Man, this is some shady stuff. I don't know about this. I remember reading this going, I don't know. Iron Man's like, look, okay, I don't want to battle. I just want to talk. He comes down there and he's got Captain America and Iron Man are face to face. He extends his hand out to Captain America and Iron Man reaches out, shakes his hand, and he looks down on his hand, and there's a damn like electronic impulse thing on his hand, and he's like, wait a second, and then boom, his armor shorts out. They're in a fight. Okay, now why Captain America, who wanted to talk earlier, decided don't want to talk anymore? I guess he's decided that the line's been crossed. Things have already changed well enough to where there's no going back. And which I could understand because this is a trap they just walked into. I could understand being not at ease. But anyway, we get this big fight. Our heroes once again are fighting each other. Iron Man actually just almost beats the living crap out of Captain America. I don't know if they're turning the tide or whatever, but all of a sudden a lightning strike comes out of nowhere and Thor shows up at the end of issue 3.
Gay.
Wait a second. Now explain yourself, Mark. This is Thor. This is the God of Thunder. Just showed up out of nowhere.
And
he's on the side of the registration, of all things. What? What? You say gay. Explain yourself.
Because it's not Thor. It's an android of some sort.
That is correct. This is a clone android cyborg doohickey guy. That apparently
doohickey guy. Nice.
That's some good book learning you got there, Star Trek.
I know words.
I put them all together. I make sentences.
You got some fancy speech making.
Give me a thesaurus.
Thesaurus, sir.
I need synonyms for doohickey right now. Stat.
Thingamabob.
Thingamabob. Now
call it.
this is, that's a good commercial. I've been watching a lot of 80s commercials, just by the way, because there is a YouTube channel just strictly for 80s commercials. I'll just throw that out there. Ronnie knows what I'm talking about because I'll message him a few 80s commercials every once in a while. I get bored at work. What can I say? Anyway.
Hang on. Just since you brought it up, have you ever Kellogg's Nut and Honey Crunch? One of my favorite like series of commercials ever. You know, like, what are you eating, Sarge? Nut and honey.
Ah, yes.
Kellogg's Nut and Honey Crunch.
The Nut and Honey. Some good stuff. My favorite right now is the Oreo commercials. And I used to know the jingle right off the top of my head. Bumpy deep a dump da dut Oreo cookie. Deep da dut da dut da dut Oreo cookie. All right.
Well, this took a turn.
I'll forward you the videos, Ronnie Adams. You just hush it.
Or he'll get his doohickey on you.
Ouch. Watch out.
Oh, I want your doohickey nowhere near the car.
Take your doohickey and leave, sir.
Anyway, okay. Well, I think at the end of issue 3, clearly the big cliffhanger is, holy crap, Thor's returned. Because at this point in time, Thor was dead. And when Maria Hill says codename Lightning, and then all of a sudden Hercules is levitated in the air by a lightning bolt, and then boom, Thor shows up. I'm sure that at the time, if I was reading this, everyone, you know, holy shit. But then, just as we find out, Mark shows up with issue 4 and a loud resonating gay, we find out. We find out that Thor is a cyborg, but that isn't the big thing that happens in issue 4. Issue 4, you know, as this battle continues, Captain America's team realizes that the tide has turned, Thor has now showed up and we need to get the hell out. Mm-hmm. At Goliath, a character a character that
Why do you always have to kill a black guy?
And he went there.
Goliath, very similar to, I'm trying to think, Ant-Man used to be, not Ant-Man, was it Hank Pym that used to be able to, like, increase his size to become Giant-Man?
Yeah, Giant-Man.
Okay, Goliath has the same powers. He can increase his size, he becomes huge. He decides to try and take Thor out. And Thor, with the power of, I assume, Mjolnir here, I'm guessing, although I have my doubts. I don't know. We'll get to that here in a second. But with the power that Thor brings down, channels through his hammer, and boom, shoots a lightning bolt through Goliath. And we have our first official death that has occurred because of this, or hero death, I guess you should say, that has occurred because of this battle between our registration headed by Iron Man and the Captain America's underground.
A single white hero dies.
Goliath falls to the ground.
So many to pick from. They pick the Lando Calrissian of the group and fucking shoot him in the chest.
Can I?
Racist.
Okay. You look at poor Bill Foster. He's been dealt a really bad card to begin with because he started off, he's Hank Pym's laboratory assistant. He's really smart in his own right. But he's a lab assistant.
Okay.
And he is, like I said, he's Hank Pym's lab assistant. He's investigating Van Dyne and Pym's apparent deaths. He discovers, you know, he figures out the Pym particle, and he decides, well, I'm going to be a superhero now.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes on and he's like, okay, what should I call myself? Black Goliath.
That was what he started out with?
Yeah. He's Black Goliath.
Okay.
All right.
Good. So,
a little on the nose.
Yeah. So
why's it gotta be Black Goliath?
Exactly. Why is it gotta be Black Goliath? Why can't it just be Goliath? So he's Black Goliath. So after a while, I think he goes on to be Giant Man, or he loses his powers or something. He joins
jokes at this point.
Right. He
then changes his name to Mandingo.
Oh my God. Wow.
That would have been awesome if he had. Like, Marvel presents Mandingo.
God. So he goes. He has a very short lived series of his own called Black Goliath, and it gets canceled. He joins the Defenders. Yay, the Defenders.
The Defenders.
And then he helps a few others, and then he goes on to help the West Coast Avengers, or Avengers West Coast, whichever one you want to call them. Yay. Now, Josh Calandris will probably ring me up.
Yeah, he's going to throw some at you. All the way from Albany.
Yeah, I know, right? And then his series gets canceled. He's not the most respected person in the world as when it comes to being a superhero. And then the not Thor shoots him in the chest.
Kills him outright.
Just kills him. You know, and he's one of the few superheroes they have not brought back. They brought him back for a little while as a zombie. But I don't know. Poor guy.
Yeah, he bites the big one. He is
he's destroyed in this.
Yeah, I mean, there's a hole in his chest. He falls down. He is dead. Captain America's team, Captain America, like I said, still getting, you know, he got the crap beat out of him. Things have
opened through this whole series, man.
He does, too. Things have taken a turn. Thor isn't done. He's now decided he's going to take out the rest of the team, and he's about to shoot another bolt of lightning when Susan Richards, who I know I've said this before, Reed Richards was part of the registration side of things, teaming with Iron Man. You know, him and the rest of the Fantastic Four were pro-registration. Sue Richards, in the midst of this battle, you know, throws an invisible force field and makes a turn. Well, I shouldn't say a turn, but she saves Captain America's team and tells them to get out of there from the murderous Thor. Then, of course, you know, we find out, Reed Richards walks over there, shuts him down, shuts down the crazy Thor. We are then, our two sides are separated. You know, the Captain America's team gets out of there. Registration team cuts their losses, figure out what exactly went wrong with Thor.
Murderous, insane person is what's wrong with him.
Yeah, exactly. Something went wrong. They said they had cloned Thor in here. I believe that was mentioned. So they cloned Thor and they made him a robot. I don't know exactly what was going on with him. And I don't even know if that's Mjolnir that he's got. I don't know if that's Thor's hammer. Mark Radulich, you ever heard of the Thunderbolts?
Yeah, but the incarnation of the Thunderbolts that I was familiar with was led by the Red Hulk, who everyone hates.
Okay. Was it a bunch of villains? Same scheme where it was a bunch of, like, reformed villains?
It was a bunch
villains?
Of anti-heroes. It was Agent Venom, Red Hulk, Punisher, Deadpool, Elektra. I want to say that's it. Maybe there might have been one other person.
Okay. Well, the Thunderbolts have now become pro-registration. Surprise, surprise. They've decided that... I don't know if they've decided. Yeah, I was going
to
say, I don't know if there's much of a decision there. I think they're pretty much told.
They're a government team.
Yeah. They're going to be helping take out Cap and the rest of his men.
You either register or you go back to jail.
And just looking at this cadre of villainy here turned good, quotes on good, we've got Venom, we've got Bullseye, Taskmaster, pretty sure that's Lady Deathstrike. And who is the dude back there? I'm looking at the back panel here, Ronnie. Is that not Hawkeye, is it? That's some other dude, because I remember he shows up later. And I don't know who the chick is with the stripe in her hair. It almost reminds me of Rogue, but I don't know for sure. So
probably not Rogue.
Probably not Rogue. Susan Richards. What'd you think of that little bit of turn there, Mark?
Typical woman. She takes no side in this thing, but she's mad that her husband pays more attention to his work than her. No, I mean, I'm trying to be funny here, but I it was one of those issues with Sue Storm that I was like, why do they have to go in this direction with her? Because she really does look at what he's doing, and she isn't taking a stand as such as much as she's saying, I don't like who you've become.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is a very personal thing for her. I suppose you can't have every character have a political agenda here. Some of the characters have to have a personal stake in the game in order to keep it interesting. So I think from a very personal point of view, I got annoyed with the character because, once again, it's read, 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 and she doesn't see the bigger issue. However, I do commend the writers of the series for not making her a dainty wallflower and giving her, a proper, powerful presence. Because I know there was a, I know there's a point where they'll start drawing her like a whore, which I thought was interesting. But, you know, for the big part of Sue Storm's career as a hero, she never really fully realizes her potential. She's almost reluctant, you know, I'm not there for the ride as such, but she, you know, she's not like her brother who really gets off on being a hero. She's sort of there because, you know, that's the family's calling at this juncture. But I think she would have much preferred to be just a wife and mother, and she would have preferred if Reed paid attention to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of that comes out in the interactions that they have here. I will say this, and I don't know if it's this issue or not. No, I think it's at the very end of the series, and so I'm skipping ahead. But she leaves him a Dear John letter, and it made me very sad.
Yeah. I don't think it's at the end of the series. I think it's like shortly. I think it's in this next one, I believe, because she's decided to join the Resistance. Let's talk about that real quick. I mean, I know, again, we're skipping ahead a little bit, but that doesn't matter. What do you think of that? I mean, she straight up leaves her family. Do you think she justified it well in her letter where she's like, I'm leaving the kids with you because they're safe? Is this something that she should have?
I think I know where you're going with this. And here's the question. If you decide that you're going to leave your wife, and you don't have a place to go, you're essentially going underground, you're possibly homeless, why would you bring your kids?
I agree, but I would expect that my wife to stand by me because I married her, okay? We can disagree, but her ass leaving me to go help fight against me, I'm going to have problems.
I think she does that out of protest for him once again not paying her any attention.
I could see that. I think there's obviously a deeper issue here, because what she has realized is the fact that Reed has devoted so much time to this war, this civil war, that she realizes his focus is clearly, I wouldn't say not on her, but it's on the wrong things.
One of the complaints people have made about the Marvel Cinematic Universe is that they took Reed's character and gave it to Iron Man. Mm-hmm. And that he is the one creating without thinking. That was the whole point of Age of Ultron. It was a reaction out of fear. It was the I can so I will without thinking about the consequences of what it is you're doing. That was the whole thematic philosophical battle going on in Age of Ultron when they weren't bashing each other over the head. But Tony Stark is very much a lot of Reed Richards in the movies. Mm-hmm. And Reed Richards in the comic book is somebody who is very excited about creating without thinking about the consequences of what he's doing. That's half the trouble the Fantastic Four get into. When they're not fighting aliens who are trying to attack the Earth, they're dealing with Reed Richards and his crazy antics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think where she's coming from as a wife is she's tired of it. She's tired of Reed putting science before her. And I don't know of a wife that wouldn't feel that way.
I think it's her way of trying to make him open up his eyes while she's, you know, look, this has gone too far. You've clearly made your decisions. I'm out of here if things don't change. Well, she doesn't really give him an ultimatum. She's like, look, I'm out of here unless things change. I'm coming back.
You know, if she he makes it very, very clear. He is compelled to do what he is doing and does not see a reason to stop. And that's when she says, okay, well, I got to go then.
Mm-hmm. Issue 5 kind of starts out of nowhere, if I remember correctly. Like, there's an issue between Iron Man and Spider-Man. I shouldn't go without mentioning Spider-Man's awesome costume that Iron Man helped build, which is the Iron. You don't like it?
I hated it.
No, bull crap.
Well, I really did.
Give me a big yay!
No, that is incorrect.
I'd rather not.
Radlett, you're on the side with Ronnie here. This is an awesome costume.
No, I'm fine with it.
All right,
cool. I wanted Ronnie to yell at Getty.
just wanted to hear him yell it. I would hope, I'm very much hoping that this appears in the movie. I want to see it. Although
I doubt it appears in Civil War.
You stop it. Stop it.
I doubt it appears in Civil War. I would like to see it in Homecoming.
Okay. All right. But anyway, there's a little bit of tension between Iron Man and Spider-Man here. As Spider-Man he's becoming a little bit more upset with the way the registration side of things are turning, specifically the fact with the way Iron Man has been kind of keeping tabs on him. Really, I don't know if a whole lot of that is explained, because issue 5 pretty much just opens up with them in an argument, and it looks like I think Spider-Man broke through a wall to come at Iron Man. And so they start getting into it and getting into a heated argument to where there's a battle that's about to happen. As a matter of fact, I think Spider-Man hits Iron Man and sends him through a wall. They start going at it. Spider-Man tries to escape. He does escape. So now Spider-Man's on the run. Another piece of the registration background, which is this guy was the face of the registration. If anybody was the face, you had Iron Man and then you had Spider-Man. The one guy the public adored, everybody except for J. Jonah Jameson and faithful to the Daily Bugle. This guy, losing this piece of the registration puzzle, clearly worries Iron Man, and that's specifically why he's been keeping tabs on him. But now things have changed. Spider-Man has decided to leave the fold, and he's actually being chased by the Thunderbolts, who are put into action to try and find Spider-Man. They follow him into the sewers. There's a bit of a battle. Somebody shows up and rescues Spider-Man, and none other than...
It's nobody.
Believe it or not, he's dead. There's your twist. Spider-Man's dead. No, the Punisher shows up.
Is bad.
The Punisher shows up and rescues Spider-Man from the Thunderbolts, gets him out of there, and takes him back to the stronghold, Captain America's stronghold. It's actually one of these hiding places, I think, that's Nick Fury set up. One of, like, 17 or 53 or 52, I don't know.
No!
Old 52, as Teasley would say, the old 52.
Can I say this is one of my favorite parts in this whole storyline?
With Punisher showing up?
Yes, because... Oh. I'm a Punisher fan, you know, not as much as street level starch, but, it takes two characters that you could not give a crap about. And the guy you were trying to figure out, I figured it out, it was Toy Man.
Ah, there we go. Looks and, like Hawkeye almost.
Yeah, because of the purple mask, you know, you've got Toy Man and Jack-O-Lantern, two nobodies, you know. Yeah.
Jack-O-Lantern I recognize as one of the big, one of the big villains of Spider-Man's Rogues Gallery.
Right.
Toy Man, not so much, but definitely Jack-O-Lantern.
But you got two guys that you couldn't give a crap about is Toy Man and Jack-O-Lantern, and Punisher just jacks them up. I mean, no bones about it. No remorse. He just tears them up, man, and just says, yeah, you're dead, you know, and he shoots Jack-O-Lantern in the head, and you see pieces of pumpkin flying everywhere. It's
like pumpkin bread.
Exactly. And that's why I love it. No, it's just because you get to see the Punisher be the Punisher, and you finally get to see him do it against, you know, some quote unquote superpowered guys. That's why I liked it.
Yeah, I was down for it when he showed up. And then, of course, when he shows up at, you know, the underground's hiding place there, and he's carrying, you know, an unconscious Spider-Man in his arms, and he drops him off in order to get some help. And right there, I'm like, yes, now we got the Punisher on the side of the Resistance. This is great. So at the end of issue 5, we get a little bit of an ominous message where Daredevil apparently had gotten caught. And as he's getting put into this, we didn't even talk about the prison, which is aptly named 42. There's this huge prison that they're taking all the unregistered superheroes they can get their hands on, along with the villains, and shipping them off to the Negative Zone. All right, so anyway, Daredevil gives us ominous message to Tony about how he's got his 32 pieces of silver. Anyway, it's a warning. Be ready, because it's coming. He's going to reap what he sows. So in issue 6, we get to where Susan has made a plea with Namor, who has a bit of a history with Namor, and she is pleading with Namor to join the side of the Resistance, at least help him out. He's like, I don't think so. That's pretty much the message you get. He's not very interested. So he turns her down into helping out Captain America's side.
She could have tried a little harder.
She may have, too, because Yeah, spoilers.
Because he still said no.
There's a panel where she's wiping her chin off, and she's like, and he's like, I'm going.
Come on.
Oh, man.
What?
What?
A lot of manga out there. A lot, not manga. What do I think of them? Hentai.
Hentai writer.
That's right.
I have to mention, though, I hate to interrupt you right before, you know, he gets the silver coin.
Yeah.
Back in the resistance, I guess you could call it, back in their headquarters, you see something very important. When Punisher drops Spider-Man off, a near lifeless Spider-Man with his toes sticking out of his costume.
Details.
You see how, I mean, it's beautiful art, I think. I love it.
I like Steve McNiven's stuff.
Yeah. Man. You see Tigra on a cell phone.
Ooh.
A Motorola Razr, to be exact.
This is something that I never caught.
Yeah, she is.
She's making a phone call.
A bit of a traitor.
That's right. We find out she's a traitor later on down the road, I think in the sixth issue here at our final battle.
They also yell at Punisher, Van Helsing, you murderer!
Dude, the Punisher doesn't get more Punisher than what happens here in the stronghold here in a few minutes. Punisher gets the plans in the Negative Zone prison. They need that so they're formulating some kind of a plan. So he infiltrates the Baxter building, gets these plans. Shortly thereafter, some villains decide to, what are their names? Goldbug and, I mean, Schmageggy, as Mark would probably call the other one.
Goldbug and Schmageggy.
Schmageggy and ham sandwich.
Schmageggy and ham sandwich. Putting fear in the hearts of men. They show up and they're wanting to offer their assistance to help out the resistance, and that rhymes. So I'm about to.
That's beautiful.
That was awesome. And I can see Captain America on a poster right now, pointing at you, Ronnie Adams. We need your assistance
to join the resistance.
It's right up there with "Don't be stupid, be a smarty, come and join the Nazi party."
Anyway, these two villains show up. They're offering their help. It's almost being considered until, like, two panels later, they're shot dead. And you're like, what the fuck just happened? And there stands the Punisher with two automatic weapons, one in each hand. And he is just
What?
I'm just doing like Punisher does.
Oh, my gosh. That is so...
What are you looking at me like that for?
My favorite part of this whole series is that right there, where he blows them away, and then Captain America gets up and just, I mean, messes him up. But it's so great because he's sitting there, and he looks at Frank. And Captain America looks at Frank Castle and says, "Fight back." Punisher looks at him and says, "Not against you."
Yeah.
So awesome. Punisher showed up for an issue. Punisher exits shortly thereafter in the next issue.
He does.
Exit stage right.
Yes, sir.
Well, I did my deal, my duty. I'm done here.
And Punisher out.
Should we talk about Stephen Strange? I mean, he's pretty much a non-factor in here, but they decide to bring him up a couple times. Even Uatu, the Watcher, comes to him and it's like, hey, you know, you could take care of this with just a wave of the finger. It would be taken care of. Why don't you do it? Stephen Strange, which I didn't realize had that much power, but according to Uatu, who knows all and sees all, apparently Stephen Strange, Dr. Strange, could take care of this. But instead, Dr. Strange is hanging out North Pole, according to our comic book here, and he's practicing Satan worship in the middle of this.
I was gonna go with smoking pot.
he's out of it. So we just want to let our reader.
I think he says he realizes he's overpowerful and that this isn't his place. His job is to defend the universe from mystic enemies, and, you know, demons and that sort of thing. This is a human, a very human, very political thing. And he's like, I have no place in this. And that's why he's staying out of it. Now, from a writing perspective, I think that that's exactly right, is that they could have had Dr. Strange come in and end the thing in one issue. But so you have to find a reason for him to stay out.
Okay.
Much like why they didn't include the Hulk in this either. You know, the Hulk at this point, we're still doing the Planet Hulk thing. And because, again, what we register. No.
Okay.
Well, that was a quick issue.
Yeah. Civil War over.
Hulk, register. No. Okay, you know, it's just a suggestion. We're good. We're good.
Right here. Registering merely a suggestion, not a law.
Don't worry about it, Bruce. We're good. I mean, Hulk.
Puny Banner.
Please put the White House down.
Yeah.
So I want to ask real quick, Mark, because I don't know. I can't remember for sure. But was Stephen Strange part of the Illuminati?
Yes.
Okay.
He was right. Part of the business that sent the Hulk into, you know, to the moon. And that does not go well for anybody at the end of the day.
Mm.
To the moon with you, Hulk.
I cannot wait to cover Planet Hulk. That is a good series.
At some point, you got to have me on for World War Hulk.
Yes.
Which is 5 inches of Hulk saying, I'm going to kill all you bitches.
I want to start with you, and I'm going to start with you. I love how he goes to the moon first. And he's like, all right, Black
Hulk. World War Hulk is literally 5 inches. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. I betrayed you, Hulk. Oh, I give up. Sorry. Let me put New York back together again, and that goes there, and here's your spine back. Sorry, Iron Man, I fucked up. Little bit, you know him, Hulk. Oh, a little bit of a rage problem.
Oh, my bad, dude. Nope, no problem. No problem, Hulk. We're good here.
Can't trust them damn cockroach people. That's the problem.
Yeah. Doggone. I don't even know what the dude's name is.
Meek or fucking, Meek. I don't know, Florida Palmetto Bug. I don't remember.
Florida Palmetto Bug. End of issue 6 is just getting you ready for what's going to happen in issue 7. Captain America, believe it or not, 6 comes before 7. I'm just going to let you guys know that right now. All right.
Well, dang.
Thank you for not doing the Common Core method of labeling comic books.
Captain America's team, you know, I said they got the blueprints for the Negative Zone prison. They're heading that way. And lo and behold, sure enough, waiting for them in, I don't know if this is in the Negative Zone or right there at the entry to the Negative Zone, sits Iron Man and his band of Registration Faithful. Ronnie, do you have the last page in front of you? I don't know if you do or not, of issue 6.
Yeah, because they were training. Punisher gets his butt kicked. Stephen Strange worshiping the devil. Okay, here we go.
All right.
Sorry, I don't know why I did that.
Do the underground. Captain America's underground. Who's okay. Who do you see? Who can you name?
All right. So you have got Human Torch, Falcon, Cloak and Dagger, Spider-Man, Captain America, of course, Luke Cage, Solo. Yeah, the guy with the green outfit.
Okay.
He can teleport and has guns. Kind of a poor man's Deadpool, but doesn't kill. Let's see. You've got the dude with the... I know the dude with the names on the letters on his faces. I just can't remember his name.
Alphabet Soup?
Probably Alphabet Man. Alphabet Superman. I don't know. You've got Patriot. You've got Girl Hawkeye, which is Kate Bishop. I say Girl Hawkeye, but she's one of my favorite characters. Daredevil. You've got Hercules. I mean, right there, game over. And that's all I can really recognize. The others are kind of C and D listers that I don't know. And on the registration side, you've got Carol Danvers. You've got She-Hulk. You've got Wasp. Cassie Lang, which is Scott Lang's daughter, who is known as Stature. You've got the Sentry, another game over. Got Doc Samson, you've got Reed Richards, you've got Iron Man, of course, Venom. I can't remember the dude, green dude's name, but I'm just going to call Kryptonite him Radioactive Man from The Simpsons.
Okay. Damn.
Bullseye, Lady Deathstrike, the Blade knockoff, and that's all I can recognize.
Mark, you know much about the Sentry?
Well, Al Gore invented the internet. No, I have no...
Okay, I didn't know. I didn't know if you did or not.
He's bat crap crazy.
Yeah, he is. Okay, and Ronnie, who would you compare his power set with? I mean, really?
Isn't he like a big part of World War Hulk where they have to like go get him to fight the Hulk?
Yes. Yeah,
he is like...
And he's like schizophrenic, isn't he?
He's schizophrenic. He is... They have to treat him kind of like a child at times. He's really insane. Like, no joke, he's crazy. He has to fight the Void, which the Void is him. Basically, it's his dark personality. So he is the only person I can, liken him to is I think he was there their answer, one of their answers to Superman. He has the power of a million blazing suns or something like that. And he's ridiculously powered.
Yeah. And it's so, of course, they've got to kind of humanize this Civil War. So, I mean,
they have to put some sort of limitation on him. Otherwise, he would destroy everyone.
Yeah. And you said that's game over with that guy. You don't see him hardly at all throughout these books just because he's completely. Guns. Yeah. He is really, really powerful. And just you said Hercules. So, yeah, two of our most powerful here. Hercules on.
You've got a demigod and a schizophrenic
Superman. Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say one more thing about Sentry. When Ares, the god of war, was a part of the Avengers, part of the Dark Avengers or whatever you want to call them, Sentry ripped him in half down the middle. I'm not talking like legs and in the middle of the torso. No, he took his left half and separated it from his right half.
Oh, Quagmire somebody.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Sentry ripped – he also ripped Carnage in half. And that was, you know, legs from torso. No, he took like a cartoonish. He took Ares by the arms and like wishboned him.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's he's ludicrous. I mean, like he's really powerful.
You see what I mean, Jesse, about like the comic book characters got like way too overpowered at one point. The point where that's not a fun read for me.
Well, it's a fun read for me. I see what you're saying, but they kind of took care of that because he's insane and he doesn't want to use his powers half the time. They're like, you could end this, you know, kind of like a Stephen Strange thing. You know, you could totally do this. And he's like, yeah, I'd rather just sit in my watchtower and eat hamburgers. And that's literally like what he does in the middle of one of the storylines. They're like, Norman Osborn brings him five guys. He's like, hey, man, I've got the best burgers in the world right here for you. He's like, oh, hamburgers. I like those. I'm like, yeah, you do. All right. You got to listen to me. He's like, okay. You brought me hamburgers and french fries. I guess I'm okay now. Well, you're crazy.
Come here, Sentry. Get into my van.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got these cheeseburgers.
He's like Wimpy. From Popeye. I don't know if you guys remember
Only
Wimpy.
Insane.
I gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
I won't end your life if you give me a burger.
I will gladly not destroy the earth for a cheeseburger.
You brought five guys? I guess the earth can stick around for a little bit longer.
Five guys saves the world. I would totally agree.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're getting ready for a final showdown, issue 7. It's on. It's going to happen. Well, let me ask you here, guys. Did you guys have any other, out of issue 5 and 6, the big moments, was there anything I glazed over? Anything that you guys specifically wanted to, that was your favorite part? Mark, anything?
Captain America already knew that Tiger was, Tony was like, what did Tony say to him? He said, we've had a mole on your side for over a week.
That's
and you're
right.
Outnumbered 10-1. Would now be a good time to talk about surrender. And Captain America's like, I don't think so. If you're talking about Tiger, we knew all about her, Iron Man. She's like, what? And he goes, you're not the only one with a spy on your team. He said, impossible. The only people who knew about Tiger were myself, Hank, and Reed. And then you see Hank Pym pull his mask back. He's got his yellow jacket suit on. He goes, I'm sorry, Tony. He goes, Hank, what are you doing? You believed in this more than any of us. And boom, it's not Hank. It is.
Oh, Hulkling.
Hulkling.
Yeah. Hulkling, just for our listeners here, he's a Skrull, isn't he, Ronnie?
Part Skrull, yeah.
Part Skrull. Yeah. At first, he didn't realize what he was. Hence, I think he took the name Hulkling because he was green and he was big.
Yeah, and he's strong. And he's like, okay, I must be a Hulk.
Is he part of the Runaways or Young Avengers?
Young Avengers. Okay. He was never a runaway.
Gotcha. I knew you would know that one. We got traitors on each side. We got spies. We got spies on each side. That doesn't discount really what's going to happen here, other than the fact that I think Hulkling helped in the start of issue 7. Hulkling helped release. Maybe this is the end of issue 6. I can't remember. But anyway, he helped release the some of the heroes from the Negative Zone, didn't he?
Yes.
Okay, so.
And that's where I read, that's where I looked and saw all the new heroes coming.
Gotcha. So all the, okay. So, yeah, I got my time frame mixed up there. So anyway, Captain America's band of heroes is joined by more of the heroes from the Negative Zone prison.
And then you've got one of the coolest lines in the whole book. Captain America, who is usually the goody-goody, the Boy Scout, the one that wants to do right no matter what. He's got this menacing look on his face, and he's backed up by Sue Richards and Luke Cage and all these other guys, and Wiccan and Black Knight, it looks like. Where did he come from? Black Knight and Prowler and Spider-Woman, what looks to be the Shocker, but I really hope to God not. He says, now close your eyes, gentlemen. This might hurt. And it says, to be concluded. Not, at that point, I was like, that's freaking awesome.
Issue 7. So we got our battle. The battle commences right here in the at the entryway of this prison. Everybody's fighting everybody until Cloak ends up. I think he grabs everybody and then transports everybody into the into Midtown New York. Not just teleporting them there, he teleports them like, I don't know, 30 stories in the air. Because all of a sudden, everybody's just like dropping from the air. He's taking the tide of he's taking the battle into the city. As for the reason for this, I don't know. Did they explain that at all, Ronnie, as to why he decided to take him in the middle of New York?
I think it was just the first place he could think of.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken. You know, you've got your Avengers Assemble and everybody's kicking everybody's butt. Can I just say that Doc Samson, I used to think he was really cool, but he's kind of lame.
Okay.
He's a super-powered – that's not a Blade wannabe. That was Bishop. Sorry.
Oh,
but,
that's right. That was Bishop.
And Bishop gets his face caved in. Captain America curb stomps him. I forgot about that panel. That's amazing. Like, literally, he is stomping his head into the concrete. Cloak just grabs him and dumps him in, you know, from – it's not – it's like 20 stories up, and Captain America says that all the flowers grab a friend now. And people are falling to the earth, and Wonder Man's there. Where did he come from? He's the one that was afraid of dying, so he gave up and started acting again. So you've got this craziness right in the middle of you know, they're doing exactly what they wanted to not do in the first place. They're in the middle of the innocence, right in the middle of a populated area. One of the cooler panels shows Spider-Man. He takes out Bishop, Doc Samson, the green radioactive dude, and one more guy, and Reed Richards is like amazing, and
Spider-Man's like spectacular.
Kicks him in the throat. It says spectacular. And I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. He opened up a can. He did. Spider-Man opened up a can on a lot of these guys.
In the middle of everything. I mean, you've got you've got Venom and Lady Deathstrike and Taskmaster and Bullseye making fun of Captain America and taking him on, and they're like, "What's so funny, Captain? You look like you like our little joke, our little jokes, because they're making fun of how old he is. You share Bullseye's sense of humor." He goes, "No, I'm just thinking about my pal up there kicking your butts in the next week." And then all of a sudden, you've got like 100 ticked off Atlanteans led by the most ticked off of them all for no reason. He's just a D-bag. Yeah, the cavalry showed
that
up.
Might actually explain why they took it to New York. Because the Atlanteans may not have been able to get to where they were. And they, of course, you know, Captain America, both these guys are great strategists. Iron Man and Captain America both. But Captain America, I think, they devised this plan to get him to New York so that they could join the battle and help him out. But go ahead, Ronnie.
All these superpowered people, and they're thrown down right in the middle of New York. And then you have not Thor show up with Quasar and a bunch of wannabes from the Registration Act.
That's Captain Marvel, isn't it?
Oh, is it Captain Marvel?
No, I could be wrong. It might be Quasar.
I think it's Quasar because of the star on his chest. And
he's got the bands. Yeah, okay.
So whoever, both Captain Marvel or Quasar, they're both kind of lame. Quasar is Marvel's answer to Green Lantern.
Throw it out there. I won't touch it.
So you've got Captain America and Tony and Iron Man face to face again. And they're like, you know, you and me again, Cap, just like last time. Let's hope I don't have to put you through all that pain again. So, well, things are a little different this time, Tony. He said Vision. Vision comes up.
Boom. Here comes Vision, who's not, I've not seen him at all.
Yeah, puts his hand through Cap. Or through Iron Man, and Cap says, "Now I'm fighting dirty," and just smacks him in his face with his shield. So you got not Thor, and you got Hercules duking it out, and it's just, I mean, it's chaos, dude.
Right there in the middle. Now, this is This is Avengers, the first movie, almost. I mean, other than it's just superheroes versus superheroes, right there, Midtown, New York, and you know, all sorts of craziness going on.
Bloodshed.
There are a couple important parts in this battle. I was talking about Mjolnir, however you pronounce it, but
Mew Mew.
Meow meow. I think Thor gets. Thor drops the hammer, and Hercules is able to pick it up.
Yeah, it's not really, it's not Thor's hammer.
Okay, all right, that's what I was thinking.
It's a cheap copy.
Cheap copy, okay, something that I'm sure Reed Richards devised. Because I thought maybe that played in with the whole mentioning of Klor being, Klor. His name is Klor now.
Well, clone Thor.
Thor being cloned. I thought maybe they had to clone him in order for him to use the hammer, but regardless... Hercules takes out Thor with the hammer. Mark, sir, do you have a favorite part in this battle?
Oh, boy. I'd have to go back and look through it. I think the sudden realization that they're killing each other and that they should stop because at this point, no matter whoever wins, they all lose, was the... You know, I'm more into the story than the gimmick of...
The battles and stuff like heroes. That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Captain America nearly kills Iron Man, and then he gives up, realizing that they're not going to win anything this way.
Yeah, he's
got the death strike on him.
He's about ready to kill him, it looks like. But he's tackled by none other than citizens like you and me. All of a sudden, Captain America is just a barrage of people come and tackle him. Leave him alone and grab Captain America and pin him down.
And what good reason? No, I mean, we talk about this with Batman and whatnot. These are not murderers. You're supposed to be above this sort of thing.
Yeah, and right there, of course, just like you said, Steve Rogers, Captain America, realizes what has gone wrong. He realizes that he couldn't punch a law. I think that was the thing that I read. Like, you can't punch a law out of existence. You can punch as many people as you want, but you can't. This law's been passed by the people for the people, and battling like this is futile. So at that point in time, he tells everybody to stand down, lays his shield down, and, you know, puts his hands out. He's like, I give up. I surrender. Do with me what you will. So that ends our civil war. You know, there's a little bit of an epilogue here. I won't say how much I love the fact that the Punisher picks up Captain America's mask and gives it a nice long look, in which I believe he becomes Captain America at one point, doesn't he, Ronnie?
For a short time.
For a very short time.
Very short time.
The 50 states initiative is invoked, where superhero teams for every state, registration act.
Can I just say we've got some of the lamest superheroes that are initiated, or whatever you want to call it.
I mean, do you remember in the Avengers Disassembled storyline where like every Avenger showed up, and it is like some of the greatest heroes of all time to some of the shittiest? It's like Justice League Unlimited. You know, it was like, oh, look, over here we've got Martian Manhunter, and we've got Superman, and we've got the Human Tornado, and over here we've got a cowboy shooting guns and a knife that seems displaced.
Listen, you leave Two Gun Kid alone. He tried his best.
They made for some fun shows.
We've got the Texas of I don't even know if they're calling them the Texas Avengers or whatever they're calling these people, but
the Tex-Mex Avengers.
It's just, you're looking at these guys and you see there's a theme there. Okay, there's a lot of hats. There's a couple hats. You know, it's definitely Texas driven, and you got like some dude that has to be named Armadillo. I don't even know if that guy's name is Armadillo, but he sure as shit looks like an armadillo.
Can't you feel like an armadillo?
Oh, jeez.
Okay, so the 50 states initiative is in place. You know, the Registration Act is definitely something that the Marvel Universe is going to have to live with after this event. Tony Stark becomes the new director of S.H.I.E.L.D. There's a little bit of a... We get a little bit of a resolution where, you know, Sue Storm decides to come back, or Susan Richards at this time, decides to come back and meets up with her husband. So they're back together. And that's pretty much about it. That's kind of where it ends the event.
For Ronnie, how long after Civil War did Marvel do the whole stupid retcon event where everybody was a Skrull, and the real people were in a pocket universe created by Ben Franklin, or whatever the hell his name was.
I think he's getting a couple things confused. Too many events for Mark Radulich. It broke his brain.
I'm sorry. I got a nosebleed there for a second thinking about that.
He's thinking of he's thinking of
Secret Invasion.
Now, yeah. the whole pocket universe Franklin thing was actually after Onslaught back in the 90s when Onslaught showed up and Heroes Reborn happened. I'm the 90s guy, so I remember that pretty.
I thought they said that there was a whole bunch of things that happened that I think everyone hated. So their explanation for retconning it was, oh, it was Skrulls and all the real people were elsewhere.
That was Secret Invasion. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. You mentioned
Skrulls.
Yeah, the Skrulls happened. One of the big events that came out of this that got retconned was Spider-Man's identity reveal.
Can I just say, lamest retcon ever. they just ruined Spider-Man for me on that. I'm not even kidding.
That wasn't one day more, was it?
It was one more day, one moment in time, which if you look at the letters, it says omit. Yeah, so.
I've never read it, but I understand that all you Spider-Man guys have read this one day more or whatever the hell. I keep doing that because the slave is. One day more, I wanted Aunt May around again.
I will give you this, Mark Radulich. When I read it, gay.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know. Like, well, let's see. I can continue to be married to the hot redhead, or I can choose to not be married to her, but keep grandma around. Oh, bring on grandma.
Yeah.
Let's see. The hot redhead or my 900-year-old aunt? Aunt May, come on.
Yeah, it obviously the big thing was, I think he went to Stephen Strange to actually do this, or Doctor Strange to actually, and Mephisto, I think, was involved in some way.
Mephisto was the one that made the deal.
Okay.
Bugs were involved.
There was blood of a goat. I don't. It was just silly.
I'm gonna have to check on this. But is this Straczynski's run? Was Straczynski part of that whole thing? Do you know?
I can't remember. Okay. I usually enjoy just about everything that Straczynski does, but this was just not good.
A lot of people did not like it.
That's the one bad thing that came out of Civil War. That and the death of Captain America, which I knew wasn't going to last.
There's no way.
Yeah,
because he gets killed by Sharon Carter, who's actually under mind control.
Right. But you think, well, I think it was Crossbones.
Yeah, Crossbones.
The trigger. Mm-hmm. And then it turned out to be Sharon Carter, who shot him like 16 times up close with a pistol. I don't know. I mean, like,
figure out who shot JR.
Right. It was all a dream. They woke up in a snow globe.
Captain America ended up marrying the girl that wasn't their mother.
Right, It was all those storylines wrapped up into one. And at
the end of the day, Sam's still on the bar.
Right. I mean, I get not wanting to kill Captain America, but they made it a little more convoluted and a little harder to swallow than it needed to be.
Mm-hmm. As a final endpoint to all this, I'm waiting for Civil War, the movie, to break down this way, that he's going to give himself up, that Sam Wilson will become Captain America. Don Cheadle's going to bite the bullet. War Machine's dead.
He's the one that's going to die.
D.E.D. dead. And I think Bucky is going to, is going to pick up the mask. I think like the government will recognize Sam Wilson as Black America.
What?
Oh, Black Goliath, Black Panther.
I can say that I'm really happy that you didn't say Black Captain America. That is a mouthful.
Nope, just Black America.
Black America.
Black Lives Matter, the hero.
Oh, wow. We have hit
Colin
all
the hero.
Sorts of political hotspots tonight.
But I think, like Bucky will you know, like, they'll pick up the mask or something, and he'll, you know, like, be Captain America Underground or some shit like that.
I think he did that in the comics, I believe.
Yeah. Those are my predictions. I've tried not to see too many spoilers for Civil War because I really want to enjoy the movie, and I fucked up with spoilers for Age of Ultron and for Star Wars. So, like, I just don't want
too much. Don't want to know. Don't want to know. I hear you.
But those are my predictions. I think I would – it's not a prediction. My wish is that Tony Stark – does what Iron Man did in the, you know, one of the last 27 relaunches of Marvel, where he's just like, fuck it, I'm going into space.
Well, there was a point.
He joined the Guardians of the Galaxy. He's like, no, I'm out.
There was a point where a lot of people thought that he was actually going to show up in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Yeah.
I think they had actually released a figure of him as, you know, up in, I don't know if it was an action figure. I'm pretty sure it was an action figure. And so a lot of people thought that he was going to show up there, but he never did. All right, one last question, then we'll get to plugs. Is there a part in this series, Mark Radulich, that you would have liked or hope makes it to the big screen, or that you know wouldn't ever happen on the big screen, but you'd like to see in the Civil War movie? Or
I want to see Captain America nearly kill Tony Stark and realize that he's not a murderer and stop. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Tony needs to yell Martha or what has to happen.
You're my best friend.
Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
And if anyone, you know, people, it's like, but didn't you defend it? Yes, I did defend the Martha thing, but I'm still going to make fun of it. No, I want there to be this realization that Captain America, much like Batman, you know, has his foot on the neck of Tony Stark and says, this isn't worth giving up my soul.
Okay.
You know, and I want to see Captain America's team kind of like be on the verge of winning before they realize that they may win the battle, but they're going to lose the hearts and minds of people.
All right.
They give up. And then I want to see Iron Man go into space.
Off he goes. I would love to see, you know, right at the end of Civil War, Hulk come back down, and we have no idea that he got sent. Now, that's not in the phases, I don't think. I don't think World War Hulk is in the phases for quite a while, isn't it?
Okay, since you brought it up, what they're planning on, I don't know how much movie news you follow. He's in Ragnarok.
Okay, all right, so that's the next Thor movie, right?
The next Thor movie, the one I'm really looking forward to is Ragnarok. And I've heard it's a buddy picture with Hulk and Thor. I've heard Enchantress is in it. So, and I've talked about this on other podcasts. There's a really fun cartoon that Marvel released a little ways back called Versus.
Yeah.
And one of them is with Hulk and Thor, and then yes, the other one is with Hulk and Wolverine. The Hulk-Thor story essentially is that Loki and the Enchantress are able to take control of the Hulk, then they completely lose control of the Hulk, which they have now separated from Banner. So at first, Loki is in possession of the Hulk's body, and then the Hulk resists and ejects Loki from his mind. Without the tempering influence of Banner, he becomes a complete, an indestructible menace, and he proceeds to tear Asgard to pieces. So, Thor and Loki go to hell and retrieve Banner's soul. And it's funny because Banner's actually, like, not funny, haha, but funny, like, oh, damn. Banner's soul is actually at peace. He's in this illusion where him and Betty are living a great life, and they've got kids, and, you know, and then Thor and Loki show up and like, this isn't real. And he's like, it's as real as I need it to be, and I'm finally happy. I don't have this monster in my life. He's like, yeah, but we need you. And, you know, and Banner's soul is basically, fuck off. But basically, yeah, Thor and Loki get Banner back, and they try to, you know, fuse him back together with the Hulk so Hulk stops killing everyone in Asgard. If they even take a little bit of that story and apply it to Ragnarok, I will be very happy.
You'll be happy with that?
Yeah.
All right, Ronnie. How about you, man? When it comes to what we just read, is there anything in here that you'd like to see pop up on the silver screen when we watch it?
Never going to happen because, one, Fox has ruined the Fantastic Four. But there's this funny little moment where, I mean, it's funny to me. I died laughing because Taskmaster is about to take a pot shot, like a blind, you know, he's going to shoot her in the back, Sue Richards.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Reed finally comes to his senses that that's a woman I love, no, and jumps out in front of whatever gun, I mean, like whatever gun that Taskmaster has, and takes a shot to the back. You just see Sue turn around and have this look on her face.
Yes.
You just see fear.
He's scared shitless.
And he goes, okay, this isn't good. And you see, you can just hear it like, boom. All this smoke is rolling up. And then the next panel is Taskmaster laying like Family Guy style in the middle of this perfectly round hole where an invisible something just smashed him. And then right after that, you've got the showdown between Hercules and Thor. And he said, how darest thou wear the flesh of the Odin's son? I knew Thor. Thor was a friend of mine. And he picks up the not Thor's hammer. And he says, and you know something, imposter? Thou art no Thor. And he just destroys not Thor. And just, you know, I mean, it's kind of disgusting because.
Oh, yeah. His face just caves in. And yeah. It's nothing but, you know, circuitry and all that crap pouring out of it.
Just be like, it's like blood.
Yeah.
So
now Thor's not going to be in this new one, is he, Mark?
No.
Okay. No.
Thor's going to be in his own movie.
He's got bigger things. He's got bigger fish to fry.
Gotcha. Well, you guys can probably tell what moment I liked the best. I've already said my favorite moment was the Punisher showing up, which, you know, it could happen. It's I mean, not. Shut up, Mark. I would love to see it. I would love
shut
to see
your
it.
Face.
Wait, I don't know what villains are going to be in this new one.
Baron Zemo. Which apparently continues the trend of Marvel movies with useless villains.
It would be wonderful to see. Isn't he part of the Thunderbolts, Ronnie? He's like the head of the Thunderbolts, isn't he?
Yeah, he's the head of the Thunderbolts.
I'd love to see something like that, but anyway. Actually,
what I really want to see in Civil War is for the Red Hulk to show up.
Oh, boy.
if fucking whatever his name is, William Hurt or...
William Hurt was a great Thunderbolt, Ross. Not as good as Sam Elliott, but still good.
Is it William Hurt that's currently playing Thunderbolt?
Yes.
Okay. If William Hurt, walks off, you know, walks into a room and suddenly you see, like, his eyes glow red and, you know, and his face start to turn red and that's all you see, oh, pants are coming off.
What? Pants are coming off. Napkins are going to be grabbed. It's going to be unbelievable. And then, you know, here come the ushers from the theater. Sir, you have to leave.
Sir, you have to put your pants back on. You can't make me. This is how I dance when I'm not wearing pants.
I must celebrate.
But you don't understand. Red Hulk. I got your Red Hulk right here, sir. Let's go.
Get out.
Put your Red Hulk away, sir. all right. Let's go ahead and we'll get into plugs here.
All right. Well, right now, currently sitting in the archives, our review of The Jungle Book, our Prince tribute. By the time, for those of you who are into Prince, and even if you're not into Prince, but you'd like, but, you know, his death has sparked an interest, go ahead and check out our tribute to Prince. Jason Teasley was awake. And
well, there's something.
Yeah, and
you should listen to it just for that.
Yeah, he actually had some insight to share. And Pat Mullen, who is a treasure trove of useless information, was great on the show. And we listened to a whole bunch of Prince songs that I picked out, and a lot of fun was had. So check out our Prince tribute. Check out our review of Metal Hammer of Doom Surgical Meth Machine. It's Al Jorgensen making a lot of noise.
Hmm.
All right.
A review of The Huntsman, Winter's War, which is a better D&D movie than the D&D movies that have come out. Long Road to Ruin, The Hunger Games, Part 1, will be in the archives by the time this airs. Another Metal Hammer of Doom will have dropped by this point, which is Rob Zombie, the Electric Warlock Acid Witch. Is that the whole thing? Hang on.
Happy Good Time album.
It's close. hang on. The electric Warlock Acid Witch Satanic Orgy Celebration Dispenser review.
Oh my gosh. There's that has to hold a record as to the longest title of any album.
I was going to say dumbest, but.
And Long Road to Ruin, The Hunger Games Part 2, which we'll just be looking at the two Mockingjays. And that's it. When this drops that week, we'll be doing Metal Hammer of Doom Vector Terminal Redux review, and our review of Captain America Civil War and whether or not I stayed in my pants the whole time.
Tune in, listeners.
That same week, Long Road to Ruin will be back, and we'll be looking at the Bad News Bears trilogy.
All right, awesome.
And on May 13th, it's time to murder it, yo. Hatebreed, the Concrete Confessional comes out. Get down, get funky.
Bro-tastic.
That's right. Put your bro suits on, put your bro shirt on.
Pick up some change. Pick up some change.
That's right. Pick up some change or pick up some daisies, pick whichever you like. And help a motherfucker right in the nose.
That's wonderful. Ronnie, how about you, man?
I can't follow that.
You can't. The plugs are non-existent after that, huh? What do you got? What do you do there, Ronnie Adams?
Well, I don't put on my skinny jeans and pick up daisies.
But I don't think skinny jeans are involved in picking up daisies.
No skinny jeans involved at all. Or if you're wearing skinny jeans, someone's going to call you gay.
Well, I went to the wrong shows then. Oh, dear. I forgot what I was going to say. No, we do a podcast. It's called Screaming Boy Productions. We do movies. Right now, we're a bit of a transition phase. We are getting our poop in a group with shows and things like that. We are going to rebrand the show, meaning a new logo, things like that. So we're doing that. But in the meantime, I've had a heck of a time. It's been fun. It's been frustrating because of technology and things like that. But we've got our review and discussion about Batman v Superman. I know it's a little bit late. Shut up. It's free. But we've got that coming out within this week. Josh Klanders was on there. He was a heck of a guest to have on there. It was a great show.
Good guy, Josh.
Great guy. Moving to Albany on me, which he was in West Virginia. But
Heartbreaking stuff.
Absolutely. And you've got, we're recording another one as this comes out. I mean, as we're recording this, we're recording tomorrow night. We're looking at movies you might not have known were a remake. And then we're going to go through a good list of movies that we're going to talk about remakes a little bit and why Hollywood insists on doing remakes. And then we're going to take a look at some movies that you might not have known were remakes.
Cool.
You can follow us on Twitter at Screaming Boy PR. You can find us on Facebook. Just look up Screaming Boy Productions, screamingboy.com. And then we actually have a presence on Instagram. So I've been posting a little bit on there. I'm going to start doing that more now, with the rebranding and everything. So Screaming Boy Productions on Instagram.
All right.
You can find me at Mark Radulich, MarkRadulich on Twitter. You can also find me on Facebook, Mark Radulich, LCSW. If you choose to friend me on Facebook because you heard me yell, gay, I think that's hilarious.
Send him nude pics.
No dick pics. Now, if you want, people friend me on Facebook.
No, meaning as many as possible.
People like to friend me on Facebook, and the problem with that is there is no problem except for if I don't realize who you are because you're, a fan of the show or whatever, people just, if I don't see that we have mutual friends, I'm not going to friend you back because I'm going to assume this is spam of some sort. So, message me first. And to say, hey, love your show. Love the fact that you're, racist and homophobic. That's great.
We can be pals.
I'd like to hear your ideas on Donald Trump. Please be my friend. And I will gladly accept your friendship on Facebook, but email me first. That's all I'm saying, or message me first.
I'm sorry, Mark, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I will have to say the same thing in that. I have a private personal Facebook account, Ronnie Adams. If you are a fan of the show, please tell me beforehand because I'm with Mark. If I don't see you have some friends in common, I just take it as a spam, request, and I ignore it. So shoot a message, tell me, hey, like the show, just wanted to say hi. I may be getting ahead of myself on that, but I don't think anybody likes our show. But
it's a way to promote your show there, Ron.
Yeah, just add me so I can tell you I hate
I'm
you.
I am not racist or homophobic.
whatever. fun.
I have fun conservative views, and I will gladly tell you about in person. But that just earned me some cool points, I'm sure. But
let's discuss politics, Ronnie.
Yeah, let's.
Like,
yeah,
to hate abortion. Give me a call.
Hey, I'll tell you about my. Never mind. I'm gonna shut up.
And I'm also at Mark Rattledge. What do you call it? At one more time. mrattledge@gmail.com if you want to email me specifically. So it's mrattledge@gmail.com, Mark Rattledge on Twitter, and Mark Rattledge LCSW, which stands for Licensed Clinical Social Worker, which means I'm the mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, on Facebook.
All right. Well, I want to thank both you guys for coming on here, spending the last 2 hours and some talking Civil War, the comic book event. This particular episode, like I said, will air after the movie. So I hope you get out there, get a chance. Definitely support your brick and mortar stores, folks. You know, Free Comic Book Day, unfortunately, will have just passed once this airs. Don't hesitate to get out there and spend a little money and support those guys that actually have a shop. That's important. But again, PSA aside, thank you boys for coming on here and joining me. Had a great time. We'll go ahead and get her ended here. Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Well, thank you all again for joining us here on Source Material. I really do hope you have enjoyed this coverage of Marvel's Civil War event. Coming up on Source Material Podcast, Monday, May 23rd, the plan is for a previous guest by the name of Good Stephen Marsh to come back on the program. If there is one thing Stephen Marsh likes, that's the Predator. And we will be looking at the Dark Horse 2009 Predator series. Don't forget, you can follow me, your gallant host, Jesse Starcher, on Twitter, at Stiznarchy. You can also follow the show's Twitter, at SourceMatCast. So we will be back in your ear holes in a couple of weeks. Until then, folks, have a good one.
The time has passed for choices. Golden days.